if you haven't been with us over the last couple of weeks, we have been in a message series called Old School Sunday School. We've been looking at some of the most familiar and well-known stories in Scripture. We've looked at the story of David and the lion's den and the Good Samaritan. I'm excited to share with you this morning that the story that I have, because this young man would have only been at about the age of 17 when this story took place in his life. But before we get into the Bible story this morning, I'd like to share with you another story that I came across while I was preparing for this morning. There was another young man, probably about in his mid-20s. He was relatively healthy. He had a good diet, exercised on the regular. There was no known disease history within his family. He was a relatively normal guy, healthy guy. But one day, he really thought that there was something seriously wrong with him. So he booked an appointment with his local GP, and he went in to see his local GP. And as he was sitting on the doctor's bed, the doctor came in to see him, to assess him, to ask him what was happening. And as the doctor walked in, he said, "Well, what's going on here? I've known you since you were born, and you've been relatively healthy. There's been no serious conditions or anything that we need to be worried about." With great concern, this young man looked at the doctor and said to him, "Doctor, I know, but there is something terribly wrong with me. My entire body is in pain." So the doctor looked at him with concern and said, "Your entire body is in pain?" He says, "Yes, doctor, everywhere I touch is painful." So the doctor looked at him again and said, "Can you touch your forehead for me?" So as the young man touched his forehead, there was a great yelp of pain. He shot back on the doctor's bed. "Ow, ow, yes, doctor, my forehead, my forehead." The doctor looked at him concerned. He said, "Can you touch your knee for me?" So the doctor went to touch his knee, and as he touched his knee, the same response shot back on the doctor's bed with a great yelp of pain. He says, "Yes, doctor, my knee is painful too." So the doctor looked at him again, a little less concerned this time, and said to him, "Can you touch your hand for me?" So he said, "Yes, doctor, I can touch my hand." As he went to touch his hand, the same response. He threw his hands up in the air. "Yes, doctor, my hand, my forehead, my knee, I told you, my entire body is in pain." So the doctor looked at him, smiled, and said to him, "My friend, you have a serious case of a dislocated finger." Now, I don't have my doctorate like Pastor Randy, so I'm not sure I'm completely allowed to make up words. Never mind come up with diagnosis. Never mind allowed to come up with diagnosis for diseases that don't really exist. But what I diagnosed this young man with was a common case of giant syndrome. All he had was a sore finger, but he was convinced that his entire body was falling apart and was in pain. Now, at some point in all of our lives, we have experienced this. We felt like this. If you've ever had a conversation with a person who's just gone through a breakup, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. You'll be having a cup of coffee with this person, and the next minute it's tears and sniffles because you put two brown sugars in your coffee just like Kavesh did. It consumes them. It's all they can think about. It's all they can see. In the moment, it's all that they can think about. It's all they can see. It's all they can feel. They cannot see past it in that moment. They cannot see past the giant that is in front of them in this moment. If you haven't guessed already, we are going to be taking a look at one of the most famous and well-known stories in the Old Testament, the story of David's victory over Goliath. The story can be found in the book of 1 Samuel 17. It's a big passage of scripture and it's a lot to read, so we won't be able to go through it all this morning. But I really want to encourage you in your daily 20s this week, go and find that story in the book of Samuel. Go and read it. And for those of you that have children, get your children and read the story with them. It's a really great passage of scripture to have family devotions over. Let's read what Samuel writes in the book of 1 Samuel 17. The story starts like this. "Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socho in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damim between Socho and Azekiah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them." This scene that Samuel was describing to us in this passage of scripture took place in an area of Israel known as the Shephelah. The Shephelah is still there today, and it's still called the Shephelah today. And if you visit Israel at some stage, I've never visited Israel, but just in my research, I found this, that the Shephelah is still there today. And what the Shephelah is was a series of valleys and mountains. There were valleys, there were mountains, and in the valleys and in the mountains were the major cities of the time, like Jerusalem and Bethlehem. And what this series of valleys and mountains connected was the coastline to the mountain range where the major cities were. And on the coastline were the Philistines. The Philistines were a seafaring people. They were camped, and that's where they had their place of their home was on the seaside of the Shephelah, whereas Israel and Judah and Bethlehem were all up in the mountains of this area. So the Philistines decided one day that they were going to come up the Shephelah and try to take control of the Shephelah, because they knew if they had taken control over this area of the Shephelah that they would be able to cut off Jerusalem and they'd be able to cut off Bethlehem from access to the coastline and to the seas. The Philistines were the greatest enemy of Israel at the time. If you read in the book of Amos, it tells us that they encountered into 8 different battles through the course of their history. And what the Philistines wanted to do was gain control over this area, because if they did, they knew that they had control over the whole of Israel. They would cut Israel in half, and they would have control over the seaside of it, and they would be able to cut them off and have control over the major cities of that time. When King Saul hears the Philistine armies are making their way up the Shephelah, he quickly gathers his armies and decides to make his way down the Shephelah to cut them off before they got to the high ground. Saul and the Israelites' army were camped on one side of the valley called Elah, and the Philistines were camped on the other side of the valley. Both these armies were camped on high grounds with the valley separating between them, and neither one of the armies wanted to make the first move because they knew if they did, they were going to give up their high ground and they were going to be at a disadvantage within the battle. Let's carry on reading verses 4 through 11 and see what happens. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scaled armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let him fight and let them fight each other." On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all of the Israelites were dismayed and greatly terrified. This was a common practice of the times when two armies came to a place where they were at a standoff, neither one of them wanting to make the first move and give up their high ground because they were scared that they would lose too many resources and too many men in the battle. What they would do is they would select a champion. They would select their best warrior of the time, and they would send their best warrior out to fight in a battle against the other army's best warrior. These two warriors would go head-to-head in arm-to-arm combat one against another, and they would fight till the death. When one of these warriors had won, that would mean that they had won the entire battle for their tribe, and there would be no need for all the armies to engage in this battle. The Philistines had Goliath as their champion, and Goliath boldly stepped out onto the battlefield and makes his challenge known to King Saul and the Israelites. "Send out your best warrior and let us fight. If he can beat me, we will become your subjects. But if I beat him, you will become our slaves." I'd like us this morning to pay close attention to verse 11. Pay close attention to how Saul and Israel responded to Goliath's challenge and how it made them feel. Verse 11 says, "On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. They lost hope and they were afraid." What was happening with Israel and Saul is often what happens with us anytime we are faced with a situation that intimidates us. We start to compare ourselves with the situation, and in our comparison, we often come to the conclusion that we are not enough, or the resources we have are not enough to have victory over the situation. This causes us to experience feelings and emotions of fear, often leading us to a place of hopelessness, like King Saul and his army. You see, if we choose to isolate what we are afraid of from the reality of God, then what you are afraid of should scare you. If we choose to isolate what we are afraid of from the reality of who God is, then what you are afraid of should scare you. If you are faced with an impossible situation and you choose to exclude what God is capable of, the outcome is most likely going to be fear and hopelessness. Now, you might be sitting there this morning thinking, well, you don't know my situation. You don't know how desperate my situation is. You don't know how big the giant is that I'm facing. And I don't know all of your situations. And if you had to share some of your situations with me, and I had to be put in some of your shoes and into some of your situations, I probably would be afraid too. The problem is not experiencing fear. We all experience fear. You are not any less spiritual for acknowledging your fears and what you are afraid of. Your fears, in fact, have some basis within your reality. For example, I do not fear for the safety of my children because I do not have children of my own. But for those of you that do have children, when they are in danger, the fear that you feel for their well-being is a very real fear, and it's very well based within your reality. Fear can sometimes be a healthy emotion to experience. It can stop us from putting our hand on a hot stove. It can even stop us from walking in front of a moving car. In Saul and Israel's case, fear stopped them from foolishly stepping out and challenging Goliath. The problem was not experiencing fear. And the problem was not the reality of fear that Saul was experiencing in that moment. Goliath was big. Everything about him was big. If we convert Samuel's description of Goliath into today's metrics, Goliath would have been over 9 feet tall. His scaled armor alone would have weighed 57 kgs. The linked armor that he had over his body would have weighed incredible 57 kgs. That's as much as some of us weigh our total body weight. You can imagine walking around with that and going into battle with that. Just the point of his spear was close to 60 kgs. You can imagine the size and strength of this man, that he was able to hurdle a spear weighing 60 kgs at people that were coming against him. He was known as a champion, meaning he had fought and won battles before. His threat was a legitimate threat to Saul and to the kingdom of Israel. I think it's important for us not to rush past Goliath in this story. And it's important for us to acknowledge that some of the situations we are facing are big, like Goliath was big to Israel. And it's okay for us to be concerned, and it's okay for us to even experience fear at some time. But what we can learn from Saul's response is that isolating our situation from the reality of God and what God is capable of elevates fear to a place in our lives that it has no right to be. Saul had let fear become bigger than the reality of God, ultimately making fear Lord of his life and Lord of the situation, which ended up causing Israel and the armies of Israel to be stuck in a place of torment and fear for 40 days. Let's pick up the story in verse 17 and continue reading and see what we can learn from David's response to Goliath. Verse 17 says this: Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some reassurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of the shepherd, loaded up and set out, as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out in battle position, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. Now, if you are familiar with the story of David, if you're familiar with the story of King David, you will know that at this point in his story, he had already been chosen by God, and he had already been anointed by Samuel to be the next king of Israel. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if I knew that I was going to be the next king of Israel and somebody asked me to go and deliver cheese, I don't know that my response would be one, yeah, it's funny, if I was going to be the king of Israel, I don't know that somebody asked me to go and deliver cheese. I don't know if my response would be one of obedience and one of servant. Now, I know that in this moment, David had not yet met Goliath, but I think it's super important for us to acknowledge this because Samuel put it in the story. You see, sometimes your simplest act of service and obedience can lead you to some of your greatest moments of opportunity. Maybe you're not facing an intimidating situation this morning, but when you read the story, you're like, oh man, I wish God would use me and wish God would choose me and use me like he did King David. God was able to use David through his obedience. God was able to use David through his obedience and service because David was prepared to deliver cheese to his brothers that didn't even like him, knowing that he was going to be king over them in a couple of weeks. God knew that because of David's response in this time, that David was ready to face Goliath and to take one step closer to his destiny as being the next king of Israel. This simple act of service through being obedient to his father positioned David for his greatest victory yet. Let's carry on reading and pick it up in verse 23. As he was talking with them, Goliath the Philistine, champion from Gath, stepped out from the lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When I knew that I was going to be speaking on the story of David and Goliath this morning, I started to rehearse what I already knew about the story of David and Goliath in my mind, for what I had been taught as a young boy at Sunday school, what other messages that I'd heard through my years in church. And I had developed this picture in my mind of David being the selfless servant of God that was just so brave that he was prepared to run out into the army and face this giant, not knowing what his outcome would be, to save Israel and to save Saul. Now, to some extent, this is true. David was a servant of the Lord. David was brave, and his actions were very selfless. But when I started to read the story again this week and read it over and over again, I realized when I got to this passage of Scripture that, yes, David's response was very brave. It was braver than Saul's response and braver than the rest of the army's response. But there was something that was driving David's bravery. There was a prize that David's eyes were fixed and focused on. This morning I want to ask you, what is your prize? Behind every Goliath is a prize. Behind every intimidating situation is freedom and victory from unhealthy fear. What is your prize? What is behind your Goliath? What is driving your bravery and keeping you focused? You see, Saul and his armies had their eyes on Goliath, and the more they focused on him, the more their fear grew. David had his eyes on the prize. David had his eyes on a life exemption of tax. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I would do a lot to be exempt from ever paying tax again in my life. Maybe I would have told Saul to keep his daughter because a princess sounds more expensive than tax. But being exempt from paying tax forever in my life again, I think I might have been as brave as David was. Sometimes we read the story and think that David just went out there selflessly to go and fight Goliath because he was anointed by God and he was brave and he went out and did these things. And all of those things are true. But we also see that there was a prize driving David's bravery. David's eyes were not fixed on and focused on Goliath. David's eyes were focused on the prize and what was going to be behind Goliath when Goliath falls. For each one of us, the truth and the reality is that we're going to face intimidating situations in our life. Scripture doesn't teach us and tell us that it's going to be easy. In fact, being a Christian and following the Lord and serving the Lord can sometimes be the most challenging thing. It's easy to be in the world. It's not easy to be a Christian. David had his eyes fixed on the prize. And if you're here this morning and you're facing an intimidating challenge or you've got a Goliath in front of you, there's nothing wrong with asking God, okay, God, what's on the other end of this for me? What is my prize? What should I have my eyes focused on? Where should my prayers be directed when I think about this and I'm focused on this? And lastly, I want us to look at something else that was repeated in the story several times, and that was how David addressed Goliath when he spoke about him. Whenever something is repeated in Scripture, it's worth paying extra attention to. It usually means that the author really wanted us to notice something. When you go and read this passage of Scripture in your Daily 20 this week, you will see that the prize is mentioned three times over. They tell David once, he questions them again, and he questions them again because he's like, what, really, that's what's going to happen, and all you guys are standing here doing nothing about it? It was repeated three times, and this was repeated twice. In verse 26, when David learns about Goliath for the first time, look at his language and what he calls Goliath. In verse 26, David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And again in verse 36, when he's speaking to Saul later on in the story, your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. This was not some racial macho slur of the times. David was not trying to act big and brave in front of King Saul and all the boys. Remember, David's response to his father was one of gentle obedience to go and deliver the cheese. For him to now stand in front of Saul and the armies of Israel and shout out brave macho slurs to gain the attention and hoorah of Saul and the armies would have been out of character for David. The way David repeatedly addressed Goliath as an uncircumcised Philistine was not a racial slur to insult Goliath. He did not use the language to impress the boys. What David was doing was reminding himself what Goliath didn't have, and that was a covenant relationship with God. This is why David calls him an uncircumcised Philistine. His lack of circumcision proved that he is not a part of the people that God promised to protect and promised to fight for. And because God isn't going to protect Goliath, he sure isn't going to fight for him. Your covenant relationship with God means you have a God that will not only protect you, but he's also going to fight for you. Look what David says to Goliath when he is face to face with him for the first time. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the army of Israel's, who you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. David understood, because of his covenant with God, he was not going against Goliath alone. He was going against Goliath with the help of the Lord. David understood that because of his covenant relationship, he had something that Goliath didn't have. He understood that he had a God that was going to protect him and a God that was going to fight for him. We are all going to face giants, and we're all going to face intimidating situations in our lives. And often there is no prize and there is no growth without the giant or without the challenge. It's through the giant, it's through the growth, it's through the challenge that we grow. But it's up to us as to how we respond to the giant and how we respond to the challenge. We can respond that the way Saul did and the way that the armies of Israel responded, which is to exclude God from the challenge. Ultimately finding ourselves in a place of fear and anxiety, and trapped in that place for as long as we choose to live in that place, until we invite God into that situation. David understood that he had something that Goliath didn't have. And if you are in relationship with the Lord this morning, if you have a covenant with the Lord this morning, you have exactly what David had. You have access to God's wisdom. You have access to God's love. You have access to God's power. And the situation does not need to be intimidating. It does not need to cause fear. It does not need to cause hopelessness. You see, this challenge and this giant that David faced ultimately set him up to take his next step into his destiny, which was to be the next king of Israel. By David's response, first by being obedient and service, allowed him to move into the next response, which was acknowledging what he had and what Goliath didn't have.